Morning Africa, welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jen Barty, Washington. Today is Monday, August 14, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Niger's military junta wants an audience with the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS.
He said he was not given justice before anything that they should do against him, putting sanctions or whatever they have. Let them give them an audience to discover why do they overthrow the government of Bazoum.
Cameroon completes the fifth session of the follow-up committee for the implementation of recommendations of the major national dialogue. South Sudan's Deputy Speaker of Parliament explains why he led a boycott of a debate on the national budget. A Zimbabwean opposition leader launches his manifesto ahead of the August 23 elections.
And we have said to the people of Zimbabwe, we will fight them in the courts, we will fight them in the streets, we will fight them in the ballot box, and we know that ultimately our vote is going to stand with us.
And Malawi gives a digital satellite service 30 days to settle its license fees before it ends its operations. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The leader of a group of Nigerian Islamic scholars says Niger's military junta wants an audience with the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, to explain its motivation for overthrowing Niger's democratically elected president, Sheikh Abdullahi Balalao, and his delegation met with Niger military leader General Abdul Ramin Tiani on Sunday. He tells me that the delegation had fruitful discussions and that the junta wishes the ECOWAS had given them an audience before imposing sanctions and threatening military intervention.
That was a very successful visit. We thank God for making it easier for us because the delegation was received warmly by the president of Niger, that's the head of state. He sent the prime minister to receive us at the airport, and the deliberations was fruitful because what we need is intervention, you know, to have dialogue between the Nigerian government and that of ECOWAS. And of course, the president accepted the offer that he is going to discuss so that they have dialogue and resolve it amicably. And we are grateful to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for making it easier for us to intervene. And before we went there, we got the approval of His Excellency, the President of Nigeria, Bola Ahmed Tinubu. He deserved commendation because after the team of ulama met with him and appealed to him that we want to intervene and we don't want war or military force to take place between us and Niger. We are neighbors. So he accepted our offer and granted us that we will go and meet with our air brothers in Niger as well as the government of Niger. And we went there and alhamdulillah, they accepted the offer that they are going to discuss and come to table, have amicable discussion, dialogue to resolve it.
Before you went to Niger, there was an ultimatum that the elected president of Niger should be reinstated. So when the military junta tells you they are willing to talk, are they willing to reinstate him? Or did you discuss that with him?
No, what we did was we want them to meet with ECOWAS leaders because he said he was not given justice before anything that they should do against him, putting sanctions or whatever they have. Let them hear from them. Let them give them an audience to discover why do they overthrown the government of Bazoum. They were not given that audience. So we created an avenue whereby the ECOWAS leaders and that of the leader of Niger now, General Abdurrahman and his team, let them have a place either here in Nigeria or in any place in West Africa for them to sit.
Sheikh Abdullahi Balalao is the leader of a group of Nigerian Islamic scholars who met with Niger's military junta over the weekend. He was speaking with us from Nigeria's capital, Abuja. Meanwhile, Niger's coup leader said in a statement late Sunday that they would prosecute deposed President Mohamed Bazoum for high treason and undermining the security of the country. Cameroon held the fifth session of the follow-up committee for the implementation of recommendations of the major national dialogue on Friday in the southwest regional capital of Buea. The meeting was chaired by the Prime Minister, Joseph Dio Nguti. The national dialogue held in 2019 made recommendations including the creation of a special status for the two Anglophone regions, election of local governors, and the integration of ex-combatants into society. The Reverend Dr. Undetime Charlemagne is the executive president of the Cameroon Baptist Convention and one of the speakers. He tells me that while the separatist movement did not attend the meeting, the religious community of Cameroon had always spearheaded or appealed to the government and what he calls non-state armed groups to dialogue, because unless that happens, Cameroon will never see long-lasting peace and unity.
From the other meetings that I attended, this one was more matured, more organized, very open. And I could read commitment and humility across the room from all the participants, and particularly from the chairperson of the committee. All the major stakeholders, like the economic operators, the religious leaders, they were given the floor about 5 minutes each to give their perspective and to give their evaluation and appreciation of the situation on the ground. And at the end of it all, the Prime Minister of the country, who is the chairperson of that committee, he was very open to listen to suggestions and promised that he was going to do a good follow-up of the suggestions that emerged from the meeting.
Reverend, as we spoke the last time, this is about reconstruction of the region. Is that correct?
The reconstruction is just one little piece on the major national dialogue. Last time that we spoke pointedly and specifically on the presidential plan for reconstruction and development. But the meeting that actually held on Saturday has to do with implementation of the recommendations of the major national dialogue, one of which at the end of the day was the reconstruction piece.
Did anyone from the Ambazonia separatist group attend this meeting?
I did not see anyone coming from the non-state armed groups.
So how do you bring about a success if they were not invited?
As religious leaders, and in my take when I spoke, as well as my other colleagues who spoke, we as religious leaders, we desire to see peace. We desire to see development, and we made it very clear, pointedly clear to the government that it is very important to open up for dialogue with the non-state armed groups, because no matter how we look at it, if there is no sincere and open dialogue with humility, approaching also the non-state armed groups, even in their weakness, approaching them with humility and with openness to dialogue, we would not be able to get the long-lasting peace and the unity that the government is talking about. And as religious leaders, we do not take sides. Or rather, what we do is that we speak the language of truth and call on all warring parties to lay down their arms and go to the negotiation table.
The Reverend Dr. Undetime Charlemagne is the executive president of Cameroon Baptist Convention. He was speaking with me from the regional capital, Buea, the capital of our southwest region. Zimbabwe's main opposition leader, Nelson Chamisa of the Citizens Coalition for Change, says while there are many challenges regarding the forthcoming elections, he is not going to quit the race as he is convinced that he is going to win. Kuzaid Muzenge reports from Harare.
Speaking during the launch of the party's manifesto in Zimbabwe's second biggest city, Bulawayo, Tuesday evening, Chamisa said the ruling ZANU-PF party is in panic mode and resorting to dirty tactics, including political violence, because it knows the voters will propel his party to victory. Chamisa pledged to rebuild the nation centered on what he called citizenocracy, or putting citizens first, and committing to restoring macroeconomic fundamentals that will ensure success. He said he would return Zimbabwe to greatness based on five canons outlined in the manifesto, namely restoration, reconstruction, modernization, and transformation.
We commit to deliver a new republic, a citizens' republic. A citizens' republic based on citizens' values and citizens' sovereignty. As a citizen, you are supposed to be restored to your rights, to your dignity. You are supposed to be restored to your freedom.
contrary to the criticism by the ZANU-PF party that he wants to reverse the gains of independence by selling out to the West, Chamisa said his party is the best deal for Zimbabweans since independence. That's because it shall restore the values that he accuses the ruling party of eroding, including universal suffrage, as well as other individual liberties and property rights, among others.
We have an inspiring vision that will make Zimbabwe great, that will transform this nation into a jewel, not just of the continent, but of the world. We will lead and build Zimbabwe. We will go beyond and restore our breadbasket status. Remember that we are a winning nation. We are going to move from being a basket case to restoring our breadbasket status as a nation.
The ruling ZANU-PF party is yet to launch its own election manifesto. Speaking during a rally in Harare Wednesday, incumbent president Emmerson Mnangagwa reiterated his criticism of the opposition, saying it was working to advance the interest of Western nations and had failed the citizens by running down urban local areas under its control. Although there are other presidential candidates, analysts see a tense and close race between Mnangagwa and Chamisa in the 23rd August national poll. For VOA Africa, I'm Kudzanai Msengi in Bulawayo.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Monday, August 14. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. The Deputy Speaker of South Sudan's Transitional National Assembly has been explaining why he led the boycott by the opposition SPLMIO on the national budget. Oyet Nathaniel Pireno says they walked out after members of the ruling Sudan People's Liberation Movement, SPLM, raised civil service pay by 400% instead of the 414% that the opposition preferred. He tells me that the budget also did not include money for peace building and elections, nor did the pay increase meet international best practices regarding the fair treatment of workers.
On Friday, we had some disagreement over the content of the budget. Firstly, we earlier on raised a concern about the lack of inclusion of the peace budget in the national budget 2023-2024. The inclusion of the election-related budget, we raised it earlier on. The inclusion of budget for permanent constitution, making profit, which are very critical elements of the roadmap, and also the inclusion of census, which is also a very crucial element of the election process in the Republic of South Sudan. On Friday, we had a fundamental difference between us, the SPLM, SPLA-IO, and the SPLM-IG over the increment of salaries of public servants, the salaries of civil servants, the members of the organized forces, and the armed force, the military. The increment which the parliament had adopted earlier was to increase the salary of the public servants by at least 600%. But then, for some reason beyond our comprehension, the SPLM party reneged, adopting the provision that was coming from the executive to increase the salary of public servants by only 400%. The 400% increment would mean a grade 17 officer in the public service would get an equivalent of $2 a month, something which we rejected. It is not consistent with the international best practice on fighting poverty and also on the fair treatment of workers. And we did not want the executive to influence the parliament to do what they think is right. We wanted the parliament to stick to its earlier resolution of increasing the salaries by 600%.
What would this mean in terms of the overall implementation of the revitalized peace agreement? Would they have any impact?
I would see that there will be a great impact. First and foremost, the parliament is a distinct arm of government with specific mandate of oversight over the executive. It was unfortunate that the parliament would succumb to the pressure coming from the executive to implement the wish of the executive in terms of passing the budget as it became in reference to the increment of salaries and wages of the members of the public service.
Oyetna Nathaniel Piorino is the Deputy Speaker of South Sudan's National Assembly. He was speaking with me from the capital, Juba. The Malawi Communication Regulatory Authority, also known as MACRA, has given Multi-Choice Malawi 30 days to settle its unpaid license fees and ensure that all its six frequencies are completely shut down before digital satellite television, also DSTV, services are completely terminated. MACRA said this after services provider Multi-Choice Africa Holdings last week announced the indefinite withdrawal of its services following a court injunction against its recent price hikes. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
The standoff between the Malawi Communications Regulatory Authority, or MACRA, and Multi-Choice Africa Holdings started last week. That's when MACRA obtained a court injunction prohibiting Multi-Choice Malawi from implementing new price increases for DSTV services in the country. But the pay television operator, Multi-Choice Africa Holdings, protested the move, saying a court injunction was misplaced. It asserts that Multi-Choice Malawi, as its subsidiary, does not offer DSTV service to the public and therefore cannot set or adjust tariffs. The standoff forced Multi-Choice Africa Holdings through Multi-Choice Malawi to announce an indefinite and immediate withdrawal of its DSTV services and that no customer should pay a subscription from September 10 onwards. However, in a response to DSTV services withdrawal, MACRA has asked Multi-Choice to provide it with instructions to commence the voluntary revocation of its license. MACRA also says Multi-Choice Malawi should put in place measures to ensure its smooth exit, especially regarding how to refund customers who have paid beyond its shutdown date. It has also asked Multi-Choice Malawi to submit its audited statements for 2022 for the calculation of this year's levies. Clement Ngulue says the withdrawal of DSTV services will have a big impact on his family's lifestyle.
For example, I have children that enjoy watching cartoons, especially when they are on holiday. You know, instead of paying attention, playing with the children, you can just switch on to DSTV and then they'll be watching cartoons and you forget it.
Kabetswe Mudmeng is Corporate Affairs and Stakeholder Relations Executive for Multi-Choice Africa Holdings. He told VOA via text message Sunday that the government has directly reached out to it and that exploratory discussions towards a possible speedy solution are underway. For VOA Africa, I am Lamek Masina in Blantyre.
Ugandan opposition leader Dr. Kizza Besigye says he will not give up on his party, the Forum for Democratic Change, despite the troubles surrounding the party. Reporter Mugumi Davis Raka Region has moved from Kampala.
On Monday, Uganda opposition leader Dr. Kizza Besigye, the founding president of Forum for Democratic Change, addressed reporters on wrangling within the party. He said he received what he termed as, in two quotes, dirty money, which he suspects was from the ruling government. Besigye was emotional as he revealed what he said is President Museveni's plans to weaken the opposition. Besigye said in 2021 he received some 300 million Uganda shillings, or about $83,000, from Party General Secretary Nandala Mafabi prior to general elections. He says eventually returned the money because such is meant to weaken the opposition.
All these wrangles within parties have the effect, and may be intended effect, of diverting us from our main focus of liberating the country. So we are held down trying to sort out in-house issues and not paying attention to the capture of the country.
Lawyer and political analyst Peter Olubiri agrees. He calls it an unfortunate development that political dissent is being stifled.
In effect, Uganda will be reduced to a one-party state. It's not new. It has been ongoing. There has been systematic attempts to undermine all the other parties. If this continues, then if the alternative voices are disorganized and weakened, then the free competition of ideals will be undermined.
Besigye said he won't look on as the party he founded is destroyed. He said he will continue to fight for both the party and the broader motive, the rebellion of the country. He also dismissed claims he's mingling with the leadership of his own party.
I served my two terms as said by the constitution. I cannot be a leader again.
FDC has been Uganda's biggest opposition party for over 20 years. That changed in 2021 when elections ushered in the national platform that is headed by popular artist Robert Kyagulanyi, also known as Bobi Wine. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Rwakarinji, Kampala, Uganda.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa's portion. Here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with athletics. The World Athletics has denied reports that the world record holder and Nigeria's Tobia Musa has been cleared of doping and was now unable to defend her title in the forthcoming World Athletics Championships in Budapest, Hungary. Tobi, whose name was formally excluded by the Athletics Federation of Nigeria from participating in the upcoming competition as a result of the doping investigation, was later included by the body ordering that she has been cleared. But in a statement released on Sunday, the World Athletics body said it had not cleared the Nigerian star for the competition. You will recall that the World Athletics included the 26-year-old Nigeria's name in the entry list for the Budapest Championships published last week, with a proviso that her participation will depend on the outcome of the whereabouts failure charge preferred against her by the AIU. And now to basketball. Two teams, DR Congo and Uganda, will not be participating in the FIBA Olympic pre-qualifying tournament 2023, scheduled to start on Monday, August 14th in Lagos, Nigeria. The International Basketball Governing Body, FIBA, says it will investigate and assess the matter to determine any potential disciplinary measures. As a result, the Group A of the FIBA Olympic pre-qualifying tournament 2023 will be played with three teams, Senegal, Mali and Nigeria, while Group B will be played with three teams also, Cameroon, Guinea and Tunisia. The teams from each group will play each other in a single round-robin format. The two top teams of each group after the group phase will qualify for the final phase. Ogo Odaudu is the head coach of the Nigeria's basketball team.
This is an Olympic qualifying tournament where you have the opportunity to bring in the best of the best that you can find that are available at the very moment, and that's just what we did. It's not been an easy job, of course, but the chemistry is building up gradually. They're getting used to each other. The team is bonding well.
And now to rugby. South Africa men national rugby team, the Springboks, arrived France on Sunday as they began their World Cup title defense. The team will face Wales in Cardiff on the 19th of August and the All Blacks in London the following Friday, the 25th of August, in their last two warm-up games before departing for a week-long training camp in Corsica en route to their tournament base in Toulon. The Bucks opened their World Cup campaign against Scotland in Marseille on Sunday, the 10th of September. Springbok coach Jack Nyamba says the difference between the 2019 World Cup and this year's edition is that there is more expectations on the team now compared to 4 years back.
We need to get combinations now. We haven't given teams the luxury of building combinations and little micro units and mini units within each other.
And that's it for this Monday's edition of Daybreak Africa's Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good Monday. And that's it for this Monday, August 14th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for beginning your week with us. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Barton in Washington, wishing that you will have a great week.